matter before the court is in re interest of Sarah H. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Joe Dalton. I am the attorney representing the biological mother of Sarah, Ms. Alicia Ruin Fulkin. And in my brief, and I'm not going to restate all the facts, as you've had an opportunity to review those, but there's a couple of issues that we need to talk about. The first is whether or not the ex-step-parent has the ability to intervene in a juvenile court proceeding.
Wait, I'm going to stop you right off the bat. Because you refer to him as the ex-step-parent, was paternity ever disestablished in the record that we have before us?
By a court?
Right. I mean, how else? We have the testing that shows he's not the biological father.
And we have his acknowledgement in the testimony that he is not the biological father.
Right.
And we have the record that provides he's not. You're correct, the genetic testing. There is not a court determination that he is not the father. The closest thing that we have to that would be the temporary order of the district court suspending his visitation and his child support obligation, which was based on the genetic testing that indicated that he was not the biological father of this child.
But we do know that he was legally established at one point as the father.
Correct.
He was ordered to pay child support.
He
acknowledged it on the birth certificate.
Yes.
So I guess my question is, in order for his legal rights as a father to be severed, don't we need some legal action to do that?
I believe that legal action was pending in the district court, Your Honor, and we have all I can refer to, and I wasn't counsel for Ms. Ruin Fulkin in the district court matter. All I have is the record or the temporary order suspending his visitation and his obligation to pay child support, which was based, again, on the genetic testing results that show that he was not the biological father of Sarah. So I don't believe, one, there's two issues with respect to his complaint to intervene. One, it's untimely. The statute is pretty clear. 25-328 specifically says, the plain language says, it has to be filed before the trial commences. That did not happen in this case. Technically, there wasn't a trial because there was a no-contest plea at the adjudication hearing equivalency of a trial in juvenile court, as the court is aware. That was done prior to Mr. Holler filing his complaint to intervene. And in fact, it was done 30-some days after the no-contest pleas were entered by the parents, Ms. Fulkin and her current husband, back in September 28th. He filed on November 1st.
What's your authority that intervention can't take place after adjudication?
My authority, I rely on the plain language of Nebraska Revised Statute Section 25-328, which provides that a complaint must be filed before a trial commences. Technically, the trial commenced with the no-contest plea, is my argument.
Well, it's part of the problem that you're citing civil procedure as opposed to juvenile statutes?
Well, it's civil. Juvenile court is a civil procedure.
I understand that.
And so there isn't a separate juvenile code. Nothing in the juvenile code says anything about this. It refers to civil procedure. And civil procedure statute is 25-328.
Do you understand what I'm getting at?
Excuse me?
Do you understand what I'm getting at?
Apparently not.
Okay. Do you think a trial in juvenile court is defined the same way as a trial in a district or county court?
Practicing in juvenile court and district court and county court for 17 years, I'd say they're extremely different.
And an adjudicate, they're all hearings in juvenile court. Now, in juvenile court, you'll have adjudication hearings, you have dispositional hearings, you have termination hearings.
Correct.
Are all those trials?
I would say the adjudication is a trial.
What's your authority for that?
Well, there's evidence presented, summons is issued to start the process.
Is it a hearing?
And
like all the other things I mentioned, right?
Well, other motions aren't trials.
A motion for termination I mentioned.
Summons has to be filed.
That is not a trial?
It is a trial.
Okay, so we have
dispositions
two,
are not
excuse
trials.
Excuse me, so we have two trials now, an adjudication hearing and a termination hearing, correct?
Potentially, yes.
So if the motion for termination is a trial, he intervened before that, didn't he?
There was never a motion for termination
I understand filed. That. I understand that. But do you see the difficulty? You just don't see any difficulty with calling the adjudication the only trial, I guess.
Well, the only trial before the court is
right?
The adjudication. No, I do. I say that there potentially are two trials. Not every adjudication in juvenile court leads to a trial for termination of parental rights. They're separate. There's a separate summons to be filed and served. Had they filed that, I think that he has the opportunity to intervene prior to that. But in this case, not so.
Excuse me, counsel. What about the dispositional hearing? Would that be a trial also?
No. I don't believe it is a trial.
And why would that be? Because usually there's evidence presented. Usually a decision that has to be made by the judge.
Right. But the underlying allegations...
It's not based upon the underlying allegations necessarily. It's based upon what the investigation has shown, isn't it?
Well, the disposition is to determine what course of action or services should be put in place for the parents and or the children after an adjudication has been held or a trial adjudication. They're not the same. We're dealing... The adjudication
well,
hasn't been
not
done.
I understand they're not the same. You've practiced long enough in the juvenile court that you know that the hearing that takes place at adjudication is different than the hearing that takes place when the court decides what's going to happen.
I agree.
And so if what you're saying again is that the adjudication is a trial,
yes.
but the disposition is not.
It is not a trial.
Do you have any authority for that?
No, I believe all I have is that the judicial code says you're going to have an adjudication, summons is issued, state has filed a complaint, they have to prove the allegations. Disposition, none of that is true. It's the sentencing phase. We don't consider a sentencing phase in a criminal case as a trial, do we?
It's not a criminal case.
Well, I'm just making that analogy, Judge. I don't think it's the same. Disposition is not a trial. It's another hearing.
Well, we all know that juvenile court is different than criminal court and civil court, even though it may be called a civil action. Don't we?
It's kind of
its own beast.
It is. It's got its own statutes that apply to it. Its jurisdiction is statutory. Okay. Absolutely.
Thank you very much. I appreciate your hand.
Okay. I still have 256 left. The other issue is he doesn't lack a direct or legal interest in the ability to intervene. In Re Destiny provides that. You have to have a direct and legal interest. He's not the biological father. He's not a step-parent any longer because they're divorced. And he's not not stepping in the shoes as a parenti parent. As I indicated in my brief, once he stopped providing parenting, not having contact with this young lady, he lost that ability to, I believe, claim that he was standing in loco parenti of this child. It had been over two years since he'd seen her.
But didn't he have contact with her during that time, even though he hadn't seen her?
Occasionally. A couple of times, I think, at best, I believe the record may be on that issue. We have the own daughter's affidavit saying she didn't want to see the guy. And... I don't see how you can say if he hasn't had contact with her, he's not paying child support for over 2 years, that he is managing the day-to-day activities and involvement of this young lady. He simply wasn't. The record doesn't provide anything that shows that he was. The other issue is the placement of him. He doesn't meet any of the statutory requirements to be having a child placed with him. He's not a licensed foster parent. He's not the biological father. He's not a step-parent. He doesn't stand in the shoes as an in parenta loci. So there is absolutely no way the court should have been able to place this child with him as a quote-unquote foster parent. He's not licensed.
And the fact that he acted as her father, I mean, for 13 years, there was no question of his paternity. And he acted as a father to her during that time period. And what we have in the record is the fact we have the genetic testing, we have the temporary order. But that's all we have.
That's correct. That's all that exists at that time. But I would disagree that he presented himself and, you know, held himself out as the father. He acknowledged that early on he didn't believe that the child was his. They got married, the child was born a few months later. When the child was born, he indicated in the record that the child didn't look much like him, darker skin. However, I agree. They were married, it's a child born of the marriage. But they were divorced when she was just 3 years of age, some 16 years ago now, I believe. when that happened. He didn't provide the day-to-day necessities of her life since they were divorced. So I guess I'm almost out of time, but I would ask this court overrule or reverse the decision of the trial court. For one, Mr. Holler did not have standing to intervene, and the placement of the child with him is not consistent with the statutes and contrary to them, in fact. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Michael Greenlee. I've been court appointed by the Juvenile Court of Lancaster County to represent the appellee. So there would appear that there's a couple matters that we need to discuss. If it pleases the court, I'd like to go through each one, the three separate matters in the order that Mr. Dalton preceded me. First and foremost, the timeliness of the intervention. As Mr. Dalton did argue, he is correct. The plain statute does state that a person may intervene prior to the trial. However, in juvenile court, there is case law that does support that you may intervene prior to the final disposition. However, it's unclear what the final disposition is, but if we were to construe that the strictest possible meaning, we did file the complaint to intervene, and it was heard prior to the initial disposition in this matter. As such, I do believe that it was filed timely.
What's your authority for that, please?
In the interest of Kaylee C.
You haven't decided.
If you give me 1 second, Your Honor.
That's okay. If it's in your brief, I can find it.
Thank you. Second is whether the appellee has standing to intervene. Well, Mr. Dalton does argue that he does not stand in loco parentis. I believe we could sit here all day and argue that, at least I could argue that he does. He paid child support and believed he was a legal father and had visitation with her after the divorce for roughly 75% of her life, stayed in contact with her. So maybe he does stand in loco parentis. If he did, then he does have a matter of right to intervene in it. However, the language of the statute does say that somebody may intervene. That's at the court's discretion. The court here did not find that he stands in loco parentis and allowed him to intervene on that reason alone. They found that it was in the best interest of the child because of his relationship to her and how long he's been a part of her life. As a result, I believe it's the court's decision, based on all the factors present, that allowed him to intervene. So even if he didn't have a matter under a right to intervene, I still don't believe the court did, abused their discretion in allowing him to intervene in the matter. In juvenile court, we often see an aunt or an uncle or someone of that nature intervene in a matter if they have a sufficient interest in it, which is, under the plain language of the statute, what is needed to intervene. Finally, in regards to placement, I believe at this point that issue is moot. The statute has actually been changed in May 26th of this year and and June 5th of this year, and now what has been placed in the statute is what they consider kinship placement. And kinship placement, while they still have to conduct background checks of all parties involved, all parties that are going to have contact with the children, a thorough walk through the house, ascertain whether they have the financial means and the home necessary to care for the minor child, they still have to fall within what is classified in the statute now, as amended, as a kinship home. And a kinship home is defined by Nebraska Section 42.1311.02. And a kinship home means a home where a child or children receive foster care and at least one of the primary caregivers has previously lived with or is a trusted adult that has a pre-existing significant relationship with the child or children. Well, under this case, he was married to the biological mother and was married to her at the minor child's birth and lived with her, I want to say up until the age of 2 or 3, I may be incorrect in that. However, they did live together for a portion of her life. In addition to that, I would say they also have a pre-existing significant relationship because he did have visitation with her. He did pay child support. They did have a father-daughter relationship for, like I said earlier, about 75% of their lives. So I believe that placement was proper as well under the new statute as written today.
Is the new statute retroactive?
I'm sorry?
Is the new statute, is it retroactive?
I don't know, Your Honor. So at this point, Your Honor, I would request the court find that the juvenile court of Lancaster County did not abuse their discretion, and I would request that they affirm their ruling. Thank you.
Questions?
No, thanks. Questions? Thank you very much. I believe the appellant is out of time, is that correct?
12 seconds,
all right.
I may, real briefly, with respect to the site of allowing, it's in Ray Cayley, C. That case was a case in which the Supreme Court allowed grandparents to intervene. And there's a clear distinction. It's all about the grandparents. It has no relevance to this case whatsoever. And I would suggest that that case, if it's, quite frankly, I don't know what the assignment of error was. I don't believe it must not have been an assignment of error that was untimely, because in that case it was clearly untimely after the adjudication had occurred. There was not a motion to terminate parental rights in my review of that case on file.
So even after some dispositions. It was even after some dispositions.
It was, that's correct. And
counsel, going back to 25-328, and I agree with you that that's certainly an appropriate statute to refer to. The case State X Rel City of Grand Island versus Tillman, familiar with that?
I'm not, Your Honor.
Yeah, I only say that because the Supreme Court, like courts are prone to do, including us, has allowed people to intervene after trial too at times.
And I understand, and in some cases that I've read, it becomes discretionary.
Right.
And in this case, I think the court didn't have that. One, it's untimely, and two, he doesn't have a direct legal interest in doing so.
So, yeah, it's really a judgment call, then. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Matter deemed submitted. Counsel are excused. Thank you for coming in this morning. The next matter.